Ryan nodded to the shaman and patted Jack on the shoulder.
You must be hungry. Shouldn't your women be making food by now?
I wouldn't want to be the one to tell them that. I'll get something later.
He took a couple of steps and then turned back to face the shaman.
There's one more thing.
I know, Ryan Cotter. Thanks is not a word that sets easy on your mouth, but I see it in your heart, and that is enough.
The others were awake, eager for word on the boy. Ryan gave them the good news, as well as telling them about the discussion he, Christy, and Cuchillo Oro had during the night.
I'm not sure how we'd do it, but I agree we should try to help. Hell, I'd help a froth-mouthed wolf against a sick man.
Both women also gave their agreement to offer aid to Cuchillo Oro and the Mescalero. Only Doc Tanner hesitated.
I fear that I must appear rather a panty-waste, friends. But I'm just struggling to find a meaning behind all our seemingly random adventures. We travel and arrive through a gateway, not knowing where we'll end up or what we'll eventually do. We are like the desert wind that blows across the land.
Sure. But the wind cleanses and purges, drives out sickness, Doc. That's what we do, or try to do. We get somewhere, and if there's wrong, we do what we can. Don't you see that?
You just sounded like an old-time river-crossing preacher. Indeed you did. And an effective one at that. I suppose we must all try and stand up for what's right. Very well, I agree.
Ryan and JB approached the warrior with the golden knife to tell him of their decision. Cuchillo Oro sat cross-legged, hugging a battered Winchester rifle.
Your young man will not be well to ride for some days. You will have to stay here.
I realize that, and I've been talking to my friends about how we can best use our time here. We've agreed to throw in with you against the Sekmen.
Cuchillo Oro said nothing for a long minute, staring at the ground. Finally, he looked up at Ryan.
You do this because our shaman saved the life of the boy?
That's part of it. But it also seems like everyone would be better off if the general and those renegade chillers of his were put out of commission. But I don't know yet how we can do it.
Won't be quick, won't be easy, and there'll be a lot of dying. You gotta know that. It costs, Cuchillo Oro.
I know that well, J.B. Dix. My people have paid the price for 50 generations. I will talk to them.
Since the discussion with Cuchillo Oro, the day had meandered by for Ryan and his comrades. Every couple of hours, the shaman would prepare various infusions of herbs to speed Jack's healing. Red alder and green hellebore, with a sliced corm of a jack in the pulpit.
That plant always reminds me of Georgia.
What's Georgia?
I'm damned if I know, my dear. Georgia? Georgia. On my mind, perhaps? I'm so sorry.
The ensuing unguent, when the shaman poured it from the small copper cauldron, was thick and oily and had a dreadful smell. He carefully ladled out a cup of the liquid to take over to the boy.
Ah, fire blast. Smells like a swampy's outhouse. That's triple gross.
It is a handful of crushed seeds from a secret herb that makes the smell.
Phew! Sure must be powerful stuff.
It smells. That is all it adds to the medicine. If a medicine tastes of honey and sweetness, then the man does not believe it does good. To become well means you must suffer.
The word had gone swiftly around the Apache camp in the Box Canyon that the Anglo strangers were going to fight with the people against Yellowhair. Everywhere they went, they found smiles. Directed by one of the young women, Christy discovered that she was being followed. Even when she went behind a small grove of mesquite bushes to relieve herself, a gaggle of girls, watching her every move, stooped to try to see how she was made. She shook a furious fist at them. Afterward, she stormed back to join Ryan and the others.
Gaia, it'd be nice to have some privacy when you want to take a leak.
Her long hair, tied in a ponytail, swished from side to side in time with her anger. The Apache shaman noticed, and his mouth gaped in wonderment. In the middle of the day, the whites were all brought food, though it was again obvious that the women resented serving Lori and Christy. They began with a spiced soup that had small pieces of gristly meat floating in it. All of them tried it, though Doc only sipped suspiciously at his brown bowl.
Mmm, good. What's in it?
Cuchillo Oro and the inner council of the tribe were eating with them. Cuchillo's dark eyes were veiled as he glanced around at the five Anglos. Jack was still resting under the care of man whose eyes see more.
It is a rare thing.
Rare, huh? Why is that?
The women take many hours to collect enough of the grubs from the Yellow Jackets to heat and then boil up.
Oh, dark night.
The armorer took off his beloved fedora and laid it carefully to one side. Lori, her own face a couple of shades paler than normal, looked questioningly at J.B.
Why'd you take hat off?
When I throw up, I don't want it falling in my puke.
The second course was a whole lot safer. Green pumpkin stew and chili fritters, served with cornbread.
Whew, these peppers are strong. Don't the people eat anything that hasn't got chilies in it, Cuchillo Oro?
Of course we do, but not often.
To keep cool in the heat of the day, they all drank deeply from pitchers of mesquite bean juice, savoring the piquant flavor.
That's better. Lots better.
Cuchillo picked shreds of the stew from between his teeth with the needle tip of the great golden knife.
Now that we have eaten, we must talk. Talk now of war.
Right.
Ryan noticed that the oldest of the Apache warriors, a grizzled veteran who lacked a hand at the end of his left arm, appeared perplexed. He had introduced himself earlier to Ryan as Fight's Two Lions. Ryan hadn't asked the Apache which of the two lions had taken his hand.
Will your women stay to talk of war?
Doc answered the question, lapsing into the tongue of the mescalero, bringing a snort from the old men around the embers of the fire.
What did you just say, Doc?
That you women did not just talk of war, but that you were both skilled in the making of war. And if any doubted it, then they might find... well...
What, heart of my heart?
Well, they might find their winkle was missing from its usual location next time they woke up.
Ryan still didn't know whether the Mescalero elders had been angry or amused. But none of them again raised the issue of whether Christy and Lori should be there with them. They all gathered around a blazing fire. The pallid Jack Lauren was with them, propped up on a straw mattress, red eyes following the council of war. Cuchillo Oro was on the far side of the circle, flanked by a half dozen of his oldest and most experienced warriors. The shaman, man whose eyes see more, squatted immediately behind his chief. Ryan launched in, outlining the discussion he'd had with the others. Strategically, he'd mainly spoken with J.B.
We have to know everything there is to know about these Sekmen. The pony soldiers, as you call them, and their leader. We must see their fort in this museum. See them on patrol. Test them a little. See how they react. Only then can we work out what must be done to beat them.
A man with a face deeply scarred by smallpox spat vehemently into the fire.
So easy, White Eyes. We have done this, this, and more. We know their power, know their camp. We have tested them a little, as you say. And still we do not know how to beat them. But you, the great Anglo with one eye, can see more than all the people?
The rest of the Mescalero nodded. But Ryan noticed that Cuchillo Oro made no move, either to agree or to disagree. Ryan stood up, glaring at the pocked man. He allowed his hand to fall to the butt of his handgun, the threat obvious.
The Mescalero mock that I have one eye. But are the Mescalero blind children that they can see nothing?
Ryan was vaguely surprised to hear himself speaking like an old Westie vid. He pointed an accusing finger at the Apache who had spoken.
The Mescalero say how they have looked, tested, and fought, and yet they still do not know how to win. Then the Mescalero should leave their home and go. Go before the pony soldiers decide to come and beat you, take your women, enslave your children. If you say you do not know how to win, then I say, we will tell you.
The scarred warrior said nothing, mouth turned down in annoyance, eyes looking past the white man toward the pool that filled the farther end of the canyon.
Speak more softly, Stones in Face. All men know that you are the bravest of the warriors, and the Anglo has come here as our guest and says he will be our friend, that he will fight with us against Yellowhair. It is true that we people need such help. To say not is to speak like a crazy. So we will talk together and fight together. And then, my brothers, it will be a good day to die.
Ryan hoped he meant it was a good day to die for the collection of renegades and mercies who now rode together under the banner of the 7th Cavalry. It took most of the afternoon, but an agreement was eventually threshed out. Twice they broke off the talking so that both sides, Anglo and Apache, could go their own way and discuss what was to be done. In the softly fading light of early evening, Ryan Carter finally stood up, followed by the other whites.
That's it. Day after tomorrow. Dawn. You and six of your best warriors, me and the armorer here, mounted on your strongest ponies.
Kuchiyo Oro also stood, reaching out to clasp Ryan's hand.
We shall go to Many Deer Canyon and watch for the pony soldiers.
The Mescalero were familiar with the patterns of the patrols from the cavalry fort, but there was no way they could raise sufficient strength to do more than mount a dangerous hit-and-run sortie against the Sec men, which was all that Ryan and JB wanted them to do. They needed the chance to observe the Sec men in action, to judge if there was any obvious weakness in their discipline. During their first run-in against the general, Ryan had been too busy worrying about saving their skins to consider any points of tactics.
Are there many deer in Many Deer Canyon?
In the time of the fathers of our fathers of our fathers, there were deer. So many that a man might stand all day and watch them pass him by and never see an ending of their numbers. Now, Fire Hair Woman, there are none.
Fire Hair Woman? If that's my name, what are the names of the rest of us?
The names of our people come from how they look or what they do. Only a chief can give such names.
What's my name?
Keeps Night Warm.
I don't... Keeps what warm? Oh. Oh, you mean like with fucking. Oh, sorry, Doc, I mean making of love.
I think that's a very nice name, dearest. But I shudder to think what kind of malicious nomenclature you have contrived for me, Kuchiyo Oro.
Your name, you mean? I have talked with man whose eyes see more, and he tells me that he believes you are an old mutie. Not in body, but in mind. He sees something in you, Doc Tanner, that is not in other men. So you cannot have a name as others do. I call you Doc. That and no more.
Could be worse, I guess. How about John Barrymore Dix and Ryan? And there's the young boy as well. What about them?
The young warrior is called Eyes of Wolf.
And me?
Man whose weapons strike fear into hearts of all enemy.
By the time you shout that out, the firefight started and finished.
It is the way of my people. There was a famous warrior called Young Man Whose Enemies Are Even Afraid of His Horses. But in books it was made into Young Man Afraid of His Horses. That is not the same. We call J.B. Dix by the name of Weapons Strike Fear.
Much better.
How about Ryan? What do you call him?
His name is hard. One Eye Chills is a good name.
Sounds fine to me, Golden Knife. Now, looks like supper's near due. We'll eat, then we should bed down early. We'll be off at dawn to see what we can find out about those pony soldiers of yours.
After another filling meal, well spiced with red and green chilies, the group went back to their hut, set against the massive stone walls of the canyon. They had lamps with wicks that guttered in bowls of oil, smelling strongly, giving off a soft golden light. At Christie's request, the Indian women had brought in blankets and pinned them together across the low roof beams of the hut, giving the illusion of separate small rooms. She and Ryan took the one nearest the door. Doc and Lori had the next one, and JB shared the third one with the recuperating Jack, who'd been brought to join the others with the reluctant agreement of the tall shaman. To his delight and amazement, while wandering around the village, Doc had found an old solar-powered mini boombox from before the long winters. It had been kept by an old man who knew nothing of what it was or how it worked. It had been handed down from father to son as an artifact from the dead days. Doc had asked if he could borrow it, and reluctantly it had been handed over. He sat with a small black and silver box on his lap, peering into the top. It had been easy to remove the case, and he'd found that a single wire had become disconnected.
Eureka! And the solar battery appears to work. Not much of a charge left after 100 years, but it still functions. Upon my soul, but this is marvelous. There's still a compact disc within. Still there from that moment when all music died.
Will it play, Doc? Seen some of them that work. Try. Go on, Doc, try. For me, please.
They gathered around this strange surviving piece of pre-nuke technology. Doc pressed the round button marked with the symbol for play. A small red light glowed on the face of the player, and the music flowed out. It was a melancholic swelling sound, the solemn strings pouring into the long room, silencing Ryan and all his companions.